Good morning. Good to see everyone again. I'm going to begin this morning with a quote from a book. I haven't actually read the book, but I read this quote from a book. And anyway, it's a quote that's always stuck with me. I may have used it in a couple of different sermons. And for this topic, it seemed appropriate as well. It was only when I lay there on rotting prison straw that I sensed within myself the first stirrings of good. Gradually it was disclosed to me that the line separating good and evil passes not through states, nor between classes, nor between political parties either. But it passes through every human heart. I nourish my soul there, and I say without hesitation, bless you, prison, for having been in my life. Now that itself is a quote that we could spend a little time with. It was written by a man named Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He was a Russian political prisoner. He wrote this in a book entitled The Gulag Archipelago. I wrote it up here and I thought I would show it to you, but I'm not trying to draw attention to the book itself, but The Gulag Archipelago was a book that was very famous in its time, it was basically banned in Russia for a period of time. Time magazine called it the most important book of the 20th century. It's a book that many of you may not have heard of, but it does have a lot of powerful things. Here was a man who was born in 1918 in Russia. In 1945, was a part of the Russian army. And he wrote in a letter to someone, a private letter, he wrote something that was derogatory toward the way the war was being conducted by Joseph Stalin. Well, that was found out and he was put in a labor camp. So it wasn't good to write anything bad about the government, as you can imagine under communist rule, communist rule at the time. And so, over the next 30 years, as he continued to live there, there were times that he was in prison, and there were times that he was out, but he was always under suspicion, I believe, of the government. Let me just mention another very brief quote from him. It kind of starts the same way. Bless you, prison. Bless you for being in my life. For there, laying upon rotting prison straw, I came to realize that the object of life is not prosperity, as we are made to believe, but the maturity of the human soul. And I share that with you too, because that's something kind of to hang your hat upon with this lesson as well. The idea of the purpose of life, the object of life, as he said, is not prosperity, as many would believe today, but it's the maturity of the human soul. And that's kind of where we're headed. I'm going today to be talking to you about prison, about some of the things that we can learn about, not necessarily learn about prison, but learn from experiences in prison. I don't know about you, but I would imagine that many of you, your experience in prison has been pretty brief. Many of you may have never even been near a prison door, and you may think that's a very good thing. And in many cases, it is. But have there been thieves and robbers and evildoers who have spent time in prison and learned from it? Yes. Have there been righteous men who have spent time in prison as well? And so the thing is, our experiences in terms of the vast experiences of life and all of those who have lived and have served God, our experiences are pretty limited. For some people, they have spent a good deal of time in prison. And maybe it's because they did the right thing. If you think in the Bible, who spent time in prison? Did Joseph spend time in prison while doing the right thing? We're talking about Jeremiah in our Wednesday night class. And I wasn't here on Wednesday night to know exactly where we are. I know in Jeremiah 33, he's in prison, and that's about where we are. Later on, I'm going to be teaching when we get to 37, 38, and 39, and he's spending quite a bit of time in prison at that stage. Samson, if you remember, was in prison. He came out of prison to kill a few Philistines at the very end of his life, as he was blind at the time, if you remember. In the New Testament, did the apostles spend time in prison? Peter and Paul as examples. And so, whether people are in prison for evildoing or for doing the right thing, for some, the experience of Christian life has included prison. And in this case, with Alexander Solzhenitsyn, he learned a lot in prison. What did he say? He actually said, bless you, prison, for having been in my life. Because he found that the line between good and evil wasn't in all these other things, but it went through where? Every human heart. An interesting perspective with that. Let me share with you why I've chosen this topic. A few weeks ago, I was substitute teaching. And I subbed in a class for a history teacher. The history teacher had two classes of sociology. And I subbed 2 days for him. And for sociology, what he left for us to do was watch a video relating to the Louisiana State Penitentiary, which is called Angola. Over the years, it's gained a reputation as being one of the, maybe probably not one of the roughest prison in the United States. I'm not saying that's necessarily the way it is now, but that's the way it has been over the years. Not only is it called Angola, another name for it, but also the Alcatraz of the South is a name that has been given to it. As I said, we watched it. I watched it twice one day, and then the second part I watched twice more. So as I was watching it, there were some interesting things that I found. Yes, it talked about the day-to-day life of the prison, and there's lots of interesting things that were eye-opening experiences for 17 and 18-year-olds that were in the class. They would be interesting for you and me. That's not necessarily the reason I'm sharing that with you, though, is because I also found some things that were said that were very spiritually eye-opening as well. Two particular comments that stuck out to me that would relate to a sermon. And you know, as I was watching it, as I heard some of these things, I thought, you know, that could be a sermon topic about things about relating to prison. At the time, I wasn't sure exactly how I would develop it. And only in the last week have I kind of taken some, and it's taken different turns as I've gone about it. So it's been an interesting topic. But here's the first one, as far as something that I heard from the video that stuck with me. One man commented that being in prison was not the end of your life. You know, if you think about it, if you've been sentenced to 30 years or 40 years or life in prison, and you're going in there, would you kind of have a feel that your life was over? Your freedoms are taken away, and now you only can be right here. But what we find is that there are people who spend a long time in prison. And as they spend those years in prison, we also said that the difference between good and evil lies where? Within the human heart itself. What we find is that we can make the most of our circumstances no matter what they are. And that was the point this gentleman made. He said, our life is not over. You can make the most of this. You know, the thing about Angola is there were over 6,000 inmates. It covers over 18,000 acres. There's lots of different people. There's lots of different activities that they do. And so if you've got a community of 6,000 people, no matter whether you're in prison or not, there are people that can still rise to the top there too. The human character can still be impacted and can impact others in prison or out of it. So as these people were able to make the most of their life, when new inmates came in, they would do orientations telling them about the prison and what to expect. And also they would be trying to encourage them, sharing a positive message with them too. Some of them, of course, with good behavior and over the years would be able to go out and do community service type things and be out in the community and show positive aspects as well. And so his comment was, being in prison wasn't the end of the world, and the idea that you make the most of your life, no matter what your circumstances, stuck with me. Using that in the Bible example I mentioned a minute ago, I'll just share briefly about Joseph. I'm going to turn briefly to Genesis 39. This is an account that you know, but I'm going to read about four verses from Genesis 39. We'll pick up with verse 20. Genesis 39, verse 20, again, this is an example of Joseph being in prison and making the most of it. In 39:20, Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and grace and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made to prosper. Joseph in prison, the Lord watched over him, and what he did, what? It prospered. I'll mention a second one. Again, we're familiar with this, but in Acts chapter 16, we have the example of Paul being in prison and making the most of it as well. In Acts chapter 16, I'm going to turn over here. I'm not going to read every verse relating to this, but we'll kind of pick up there, make a couple of comments with it. We remember in Acts chapter 16 that Paul and Silas have come to the city of Philippi. And we see in verse 16 that there was a damsel who had a spirit who was possessed. And, of course, Paul, verse 17, the same followed Paul and us, crying, saying, "These men are the servants of the Most High God." Okay, and we know that there were problems in it that came from that, and so Paul and Silas were put into prison. Okay, and really, I'm picking up with verse 25 for a moment. At midnight, Paul and Silas prayed and sang praises unto God, and the prisoners heard them. Okay, we remember there was a great earthquake then there, and the keeper of the prison was sure that with the earthquake as it happened, what would happen to all the prisoners? All the prisoners were going to be gone. What might very well happen to the life of the prison keeper himself? He might be killed. But we know that he found out that, for instance, verse 28, Paul cried with a loud voice, saying, "Do thyself no harm, for we are all here." And so the jailer of here in the city of Philippi came trembling. Paul and Silas preached the gospel unto him that night, and he and his house were baptized. They were saved that night. And so we see here Paul and Silas. Yes, they were singing praises to God. They were praying too while in prison. And then as the earthquake came, they made sure that the prisoners did not escape. And they also were able to convert the jailer. It's just simply a couple of examples that show the positive aspects that can happen while in prison as well. Now there's a second situation that had stood out to me in that video. This was a man. He was probably in his 60s or 70s by this time. He came into prison in 1959. Now, this video was made probably in the late 90s. So he'd been in there about 40 years. He came in his early 20s, and now in his 60s, he was a different man, in essence. And he had, it seems, found the Lord. He had become a preacher of the gospel. And one of the things that really stuck to me that he said was, "Yes, I may be in prison, but yet I am free. Because I am free, because I have the peace of God within me. I mean, I have peace that is right in here." He was free. There's lots of other people that are outside these prison walls, and they may be free. Now, I am paraphrasing his words here. I didn't get the exact quote down. But there are many people who may be outside these prison walls who may be free, but yet in their spirit they're not free. It was an interesting comment and an interesting thought. And is it not true? When we think about the idea of the maturing of the human soul, as we read from the quote of the first gentleman, how many people among us today are outside and very free in many ways, but yet what is happening to their soul and to their spirit? Is it maturing along the way? Is their soul or spirit in a prison, in the sense that it's not being developed and not being allowed to mature? And as a matter of fact, it doesn't have to be only those who are outside the prison walls, but not necessarily outside these walls here. Can we ourselves fall into that category as well? Can our spirit at times be in prison? So what we need to do is, yes, these are thoughts about it, about prison and different things that we can learn, and also hopefully things that we can develop in our own lives as well. Because prison does not have to take on the four walls, but it can take on many different forms. As a matter of fact, turn with me, if you will, to Psalm chapter 142. This may sound familiar to you, because just a few minutes ago it was read by Matt. But as we go to Psalm chapter 142, just setting it up this time, this way you'll kind of know what's happened here. If you remember, and this was the first account of it, or the account of it happening in real life, if you will, was found in 1 Samuel chapter 24. We know that Saul had become jealous of David. David, of course, had killed Goliath, and we know that people had praised Saul for killing his thousands, but praised David even more for killing his 10,000s. And from that time on, Saul became jealous of David and tried to kill him. At one point, and the reason I mentioned 1 Samuel 24 is because as that chapter begins, it tells us that Saul took 3,000 men and went to find David. He didn't just go to try to find it by himself. Could you imagine 3,000 men trying to chase you down? Well, and David, as David was fleeing from Saul, he was in a cave. And most of you remember the story. As he was in the cave, before too long, guess who else came into the cave? Saul and his men were in the cave there too. You know, the account in 1 Samuel 24 doesn't really tell us about the fear that David may have had. But in Psalm 142, this was, according to the Bible as I see it, the subtitles that we have here, this was a psalm that was written relating to the time that when David was in the cave with Saul. Now, I don't know what your Bible says. I have the Old King James, and I know the King James both. Well, actually, the King James or the New King James may have used a different word. But the subtitle here says Maschil, M-A-S-C-H-I-L, Maschil of David, a prayer when he was in the cave. Now, some versions use the word contemplation, contemplations of David while he was in the cave. That's one description that's given. I found it interesting that Matthew Henry and his commentary also had used the idea of instruction. He mentioned that this is the idea of instructing. Lessons that David basically learned while in prison here. And so as we read through this briefly again, consider, if you will, the time that's brought here. David's life is in danger. He is there with Saul, had a chance to take Saul's life to protect his own, but did not. I cried unto the Lord with my voice. With my voice unto the Lord did I make my supplication. I poured out my complaint before him. I showed before him my trouble. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then you knew my path. In the way wherein I walked, they have secretly laid a snare for me. I looked on my right hand, and behold, but there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed me. No man cared for my soul. So here is David in the cave. And we're going to find in a later verse that the word prison is used here. Is David in a sense in a prison? Is his freedom being taken away? Is he in a sense in a prison in the sense that in his heart, in his soul, he was strongly troubled? You know, we can read this to consider only David in his time of trial, but we can also read this in relation to ourselves as well. In verse 5, I cried unto you, O Lord, I said, you are my refuge and my portion in the land of the living. Attend unto my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are stronger than I. Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise thy name. Thy righteousness shall surround me, for you shall deal bountifully with me. Bring my soul out of prison. I found that to be a very interesting a thought in relation to this. Again, when I was first reading it and hadn't really got into the depths of it yet, you know, I'm thinking, well, he really wasn't in prison, but yet was he? We see he is. Bring my soul out of prison. And what's the reason he wants to come out of prison? That I may praise your name. So again, an interesting perspective here of David in prison as well, in this sense. I'm going to also mention a couple of passages relating to Christ in prison. The first one I'm going to go to is Isaiah chapter 42. Isaiah chapter 42. I'm going to read verse 1, and then I'm going to skip down to verses 5 to 7. These are prophecies concerning Christ. And it's interesting what it includes. Isaiah chapter 42, verse 1. Behold my servant, whom I uphold. Mine elect, in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He shall bring forth judgment to the Gentiles. Now this goes on. There's plenty here that could be read. I'm skipping for the sake of brevity, but down to verses 5 to 7. Thus says God the Lord, He who created the heavens and stretched them out, he who spread forth the earth and that which cometh out of it, he who gives breath unto the people upon it, and spirit to them who walk therein. I, the Lord, have called thee in righteousness, and will hold thine hand, and will keep thee, and give thee for a covenant of the people, for a light of the Gentiles, to open the blind eyes, to bring out the prisoners from the prison, and they that sit in darkness out of the prison house. So way back before Jesus, many years before he was born, it was prophesied that he would come, that the Spirit of the Lord would be upon him. And here, verse 6, he's called him in righteousness. He would hold his hand. He would give him as a covenant to the people and a light to the Gentiles, to open the blind eyes, to bring out the prisoners from the prison. Is he talking about literal prisoners coming out from a literal prison? Well, they would be included, but is that all? Because there are many, what does it say after that? And them that sit in darkness out of the prison house. When Jesus came as the light of the world, John chapter 1, or John, make that 1 John, or no, John, does talk about Jesus coming as the light of the world. Was the world itself in darkness? The darkness comprehended it not. I like the analogy that's here as well. As Jesus comes, there are, well, right now, when Jesus came, and right now too, are there many people who are in darkness? The prison of darkness, if you will. Sin, certainly another aspect of a prison. And Jesus came to rescue. Now, due to time, I'm not going to include Isaiah 53. That is one that I had mentioned here. We're familiar, I believe, with Isaiah 53 and the prophecy that is mentioned there. But it's a similar idea. There's one more that I'm going to use toward the end of my lesson. But for the next few minutes, too, I'm going to go back to the gentleman I mentioned earlier, Alexander Solzhenitsyn. I find it interesting. I'm going to mention a few things from him because of his perspective of living in Russia and living here. What he called the East and the West. Russia, or the East under communism, the West, or United States, under democracy. He was in Russia until 1974, and he was exiled from Russia because of his writings, because of his belief, and because he was standing up, if you will, to the Russian government. As he was exiled out, he first went to Germany, I believe, but later that year, in 1974, came to the United States. And from 1974 till 1994, he lived in the United States. And then in 1994, as the Soviet Union was breaking up, he went back to Russia and lived there until he died in 2008. But in 1974, he came to the United States, and in 1978, he was asked to go to Harvard and give the commencement speech at Harvard. Now, I didn't have any idea about this until I was reading through this and studying for this lesson, and there's some things that he brought out that I thought would be interesting to include in the sermon. So as he comes to Harvard, of course, this is the intellectual elite of America, right? They were probably expecting him to blast communism, and without question, he was not a fan of communism and considered communism to be a very bad system. There's many things that were not at all good about communism. But he didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about communism. He made it clear that he wasn't a fan of communism. But as he came and spoke at Harvard, after 4 years in the United States, he had a few things to point out about our own country and about our society as well. And what we're finding is that under communism, there are many terrible things that happen. But also under democracy, there are a lot of things that are not good either, or at least the way it's developed, continued to develop in our country. First, I'll mention just, and what I'll share with you is this sermon, or excuse me, his speech at Harvard was over an hour long. It's out on YouTube, and I watched it this week. The first 45 minutes are interesting, lots of good things about it, but in the last 15 minutes, he also gets into the spiritual part as well. I'm going to just briefly share a couple of thoughts from the first 45 minutes of it to kind of set the stage. As I mentioned, he was not a fan of communism at all, but he did see one positive that came out of it. Here's a quote from his speech. After suffering many years of violence and oppression under communism, the human soul longs for higher, warmer, pure things that are offered by that society. And so one of the things he sees is a strengthening of the human character. When you are oppressed and violence around you, the human character becomes stronger. And why? Because there is a longing. The human soul longs for higher, warmer, pure things than are offered by society. So that's one thing about the East, if you will. But he also said some things about the Western society that rather than we don't have as much oppression. On the surface, Western society seems to be much better. Life's easier. Conditions are better. There's more hope. But under the surface, there's also corroding effects. Complacency sets in. Mediocrity reigns. There's a loss of courage, a weakening of the human character. There's a loss of willpower, and materialism is a chief pursuit. These are things that he was sharing with the people there that day. And so, what happens to the human character? It becomes softer. It doesn't long for that, which, since it's not under oppression, and of course this isn't for everybody, this does not mean that everybody falls in that category, but I believe those statements themselves have truth to them. But what we see then in both of these societies, the focus moves to man himself, the physical side, with God and the spiritual side neglected or put on the back burner. So what he is seeing is here are the two ways that man lives, under communism and under democracy. And in both cases, man continues to devolve, if you will. The spirit of man is not strengthened. In the last 15 minutes, I'm going to read a few quotes from this. Actually, the first one is from the very beginning of it, but I found it interesting about truth. Truth eludes us if we do not concentrate fully on its pursuit. But even while it eludes us, the illusion of knowing it still lingers and leads to many misunderstandings. And I think that's what's happened in our country, for instance, taking a moment for it. You know, are people pursuing the truth necessarily? The only way you find the truth is if you look hard for it, he says. But do many people think they know the truth? And that's what we've seen the second part of that said. But even while it eludes us, the illusion of knowing it lingers and leads to many misunderstandings. Here's some interesting quotes then through this. There is a mistake at the very root of the prevailing Western view of the world in modern times. Man is seen as the center of all things. We turned our backs on the spiritual and embraced all that is material with warmth and zeal. The new way of thinking did not see any higher purpose than attaining happiness on earth. It started Western civilization on the dangerous trend of worshiping man and his material needs. It is as if the human life does not have any higher meaning. Another one. And yet in early democracies, as in American democracy at the time of its birth, all individual human rights were granted on the ground that man is God's creature. That is, freedom was given to the individually, conditionally, in the assumption that his constant religious responsibility is fulfilled. Such was the heritage of the preceding 1,000 years. 200 or even 50 years ago, it would seem quite impossible in America that an individual be granted boundless freedom with no purpose, simply for the satisfaction of his whims. The West has finally achieved the rights of man, and even excess, but man's sense of responsibility to God and society has grown dimmer and dimmer. Two more. We have placed too much hope in political and social reforms, only to find out that we are being deprived of our most precious possession, our spiritual life. It is destroyed by the ruling party in the East and by the commercial interests who suffocate it in the West. Let me just pause and share that again. Often we think of the political reforms, the social reforms that need to take place. He says that's we place too much emphasis on that. But we're only finding that we're depriving ourselves of our most precious possession, which he says is our spiritual life. It is destroyed by the ruling party in the East and the commercial interests suffocated in the West. Last one that I'm going to share with you. If humanism were right by declaring that man is only born to be happy, he would not be born to die. Since his body is doomed to die, his task on earth evidently must be of a more spiritual nature. So here was a commencement address given again in 1978 in Harvard. Here we are 35 years later. Do we see those same things in our society? And probably to a greater degree now. And so, I mean, this is not intended to be a downer. It's intended to be an upper, because what he discovered, and what we all discover through the Bible as well, is that no matter what man devises, no matter what system, whether communism or democracy, can they have their pluses and their minuses? They can. But yet, is there something that's higher? If all of our goal is just here or just there, if we are worshipers of ourselves, if you will, if the highest goals that we have relate to our own achievements and to our own fulfillment, happiness, materialistic sense. We are missing the point. We all achieve and we all strive for something that is higher, and that is our God. The last one that I'm going to share, the last passage that I'm going to share with you is Isaiah chapter 61. I find this to be interesting, and I think it relates because, as we were talking about, there's various forms of prison that could be considered. Isaiah chapter 61, verse 1, only one verse that I'm going to read. This relates to Jesus Christ again, a prophecy concerning him. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good tidings unto the meek. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to them that are bound. As we think about Jesus and he came into the earth, and we think about all the time that's passed since, the message is still the same. The message is to the soul of man. Too often the soul of man is bound up in prison because our focus is where? On the outer man, on the physical, on trying to achieve or trying to possess the materialistic aspects of the Western society, as was pointed out by our friend Alexander Solzhenitsyn. But what we see here is as God sent forth His Son, the Spirit of God was upon Him, and He sent Him to bind the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to them that are bound. This is the gospel message. This is what Jesus is about. This is the message of the blood that Ben mentioned as well. Because today there are still many who are bound in prison. Bound in the prison of darkness. Bound in the prison of not allowing their soul to mature. And so as the gospel message reaches to their heart to first obey, but as also it reaches us, to those of us who are Christians, who have obeyed, can we still be bound up in prison in some ways? The Bible tells us to quench not the Spirit. As Christians, make sure that we are not quenching the Spirit. Make sure that we're continuing to allow our souls to continue to mature. I like what Jesus said actually in John chapter 8 verse 31 and 32. If you are my disciples indeed, you will continue in my word, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall what? Make you free. That's what I started with, talking about the truth. I talked about prison, and the truth does what? It sets us free from the prison, allowing our souls to work and to develop, and the Spirit of God to work within us as we grow in His goodness and mercy. If you're here this morning and you're outside of Christ, we offer you the invitation to come out of darkness and to allow the light of Jesus to continue to shine in your heart, to become a child of His through obedience, through repentance, and through the waters of baptism. No matter what our condition, the Spirit and the Word of God to continue to set us free. Will you come as we stand and sing?